Bismillah. Assalamu alaikum, guys. Welcome to this video. Really, really excited for this conversation that I'm about to have today. If this is your first time being here, then welcome. Please do take a moment to subscribe to the channel and click the notification bell so that you do not miss a single upload. This is part of a new series that I'm working on that seeks to explore the concept of womanhood as a whole and Muslim womanhood in particular in the modern day. So we're talking female nature, femininity, sexuality, going on to gender roles, feminism, the gynocracy, via conversations about marriage, motherhood, and meaning with a variety of amazing guests. So my guest today is popular YouTube content creator Rebecca Barrett.
Hello.
She's here all the way from, where are you here from, sis?
I'm in Florida. I'm on the
Amazing.
East Coast.
Ah, Florida, the land of the free. So I
yes,
hear.
It is.
Have you always been in Florida?
No, I used to live in New York. I actually lived all over the place, but New York was my last couple of years, and then I moved back home. I'm from Florida, so This is home for me.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule. I know you have a precious little baby
thank
and a family
you.
To take care of, as well as, you know, very busy on the YouTube, mashallah. Guys, make sure you check her content out. It's Rebecca Barrett, okay, on YouTube. We'll put the links in the description. But today, we are here to talk about all things to do with your journey as a former feminist. And if you guys are interested, you can go and check out her own videos on her journey. You can see all her pictures and who she was and what she was all about. But I really wanted us to talk about this today, Rebecca, because the issue of sort of feminism and how it's changed the way that we as women show up in the world is... It's not tied to any race, any religion, any class, really. It's something that's pervasive. So I want to thank you firstly for taking time out to join me on this platform. And I want to give you the floor, you know, tell us about your journey from where you were 10, 15 years ago to where you came today in terms of your journey from feminism.
Okay. So I'll try to do this in the most condensed fashion because I've told the story many times.
Yeah.
So I grew up in a traditional home. Both my parents are Brazilian. Both my parents immigrated here to the States. And I grew up in a very traditional home. Mother was in the household. Dad was working. He was an entrepreneur. Since then, my dad has passed away. So, you know, changes in the family. But growing up, I saw infidelity in my home. And that was one of the first, I guess, the wedges in the door to let feminism in.
Mm.
And, you know, as a young child, I observed my parents' relationship. And I was like, this dynamic is something that I don't want. I want to make my own money. I want to be the ruler, the master of my own life.
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so that's the path that I took. I went to school after high school. I went to school for mechanical engineering, got a robotics degree. From there, I worked in oil and gas, which is very, very male oriented. I used to work on offshore rigs, onshore rigs for an oil and gas company. And I was just like, even during college, I went to basically an all-male school. It was one woman to every eight men. So think about that. And and I was a mechanical engineer. So I was around men, but I had a lot of resentments towards men, if that makes sense. I was always challenging and wanting to compete with them to be the best of the best. I had this chip on my shoulder growing up because I wanted to be this woman who overcame all these obstacles and whatnot. So fast forward, I left my oil and gas job. I started my own company at the end of 2015. And I had moved to New York. Okay. So New York is the, the breeding, the breeding grounds for toxic feminism. All right.
It sounds like you've been boss babying your way through this, to be fair.
Yes. Yes. I was forging my path forward, and, you know, I got very much like, so in high school, I was like, why would women go to college to get married and have children? Made no sense to me. I was like, so that was the beginning stages, right? And then during my oil and gas career, I was like, oh, these men are annoying. Like, I can't stand them, but I have to work with them. And I was very much one of the guys, right? So I would curse to get the validation of being in the field. I would smoke cigarettes, which is something I'm repulsed by now. Wow. These are the things that just to like be one of the boys, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so
to be more masculine, right?
To be more masculine. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I had cut my hair all off. So I've cut my hair, I think, total 4 times, like completely off. Yeah. So in the oil and gas days, that was the first time, because I didn't want to appear feminine. I wanted them to respect me, and I didn't want them to objectify me in the field, you know? And it was almost like a protection. It was like my force field. I'm like, you can just call me a lesbian, whatever. I don't want you to talk to me. And so fast forward.
Don't see me like that. Like other girls don't see me in that way. Yeah. That feminine way. Yeah.
So fast forward, I'm in New York, the breeding ground for toxic feminism. And I start really deep diving into the ideology. You know, you're part of all these women's groups, you're a part of these boss babe networks, entrepreneurship. You know, I had to fight for my seat at the table. I had to be at every event. I had to be this like this persona of a boss babe, when inside I was like crumbling. You know, I was like, I was playing this fictional character that I had created, right? Mm. And I was miserable. I was miserable. Mind you, like, this was for years of doing this.
Wow.
So I started my first company, sold that company, started my second company. That company failed during COVID, at the beginning of COVID. But basically throughout my whole entrepreneurship experience, I was tapped into all of the networks. I was at the marches. I was, you know, everything possible. And at the same time, I had chopped off all of my hair. I had dyed it blue, green, purple, pink, whatever. All the colors, right? And that's something that I'm sure we'll talk about later on, but feminism really makes women ugly. Like, you're ugly on the inside and it translates to ugliness on the outside, okay?
Is the thinking behind that wanting to rebel against traditional ideas of beauty, feminine beauty in particular? Is that where that comes from?
That's exactly where it came from for me, right? I was like, I want to be the rebel. I want to be the outlaw. You know, you would watch these movies and I wanted to be that like superhero, or like, you know, I always loved Mad Max and I liked Charlize Theron in it, and like the shaved head, and she was always, you know, figuring it out, badass, right?
Right.
And that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to portray that so desperately. But that's not my essence. I'm a very empathetic person. I have, I literally am an empath. I've been diagnosed with this. I'm a highly sensitive person. So when I would get feedback, which was constructive feedback, I internalized everything, broke down, like, you know, needed space from other people, loved being around other people, but needed to get away and like be isolated for 2 days after that. And so I always look to these other women. I'm like, how do they do this? How are they operating this way? Like, this is so much time and effort and like building this character that I portrayed, you know, to the outside world, when inside I was broken and scared and tired and all of the other things, every other word. And I was also lonely, you know, I had pushed so many men away. I wanted to compete with men. I had this like this attitude against them, like I was better than them. And it wasn't until I read Jordan Peterson's book, 10 Rules for Life. And I was like, whoa, everyone's telling me I have to blame everyone else, but this doesn't make sense. Like, I have to make my own bed, right? Like, and that concept really stuck with me. I'm like, it's my life and the choices that I've made are like, it's a reflection of that, right? And so if I'm unhappy, that's a reflection of my choices. And that's when the real work started to begin for me. And I was like, okay, you know, I talked to friends and family members and they're like, Rebecca, you're a miserable person to be around.
Wow.
And I was like, I was like, okay, great. Didn't expect that one.
No. Can I just jump in and
sure.
say that I completely there's two things that I would like to pick up on, especially for my audience. One of them is the appeal of feminism mm-hmm. as a way of liberating yourself from trauma in your family, right? Mm-hmm. Whether mm-hmm. it's infidelity, whether it's, you know, seeing your mother or female family members being treated in a certain way. Mm-hmm. I know that for many women within the Muslim community, whenever the conversation about feminism comes up, that's what is referred to, is that we've seen too much. Okay, mm-hmm. we know how this thing works, and we're mm-hmm. not prepared to take that for ourselves. Mm-hmm. We're going to do things differently. We're going to insist that the community change in this and this way. So I wanted to just flag that up for my audience in particular, because I think that that will resonate with a lot of people. But also, all this activist work and this kind of this performance sounds draining, girl.
It is. Wow. It is. And you know,
and you were trying to have heterosexual relationships at this time as well.
Yes, yes.
How did you even manage that? Like, how did that even make sense?
it was interesting, because until I met my husband, I was like, why do all the men just steer away from me? Like, I would get into relationships, right? But then after a couple weeks or a couple months, it was like they didn't want to be around me. I would self-destruct, essentially. I'd be like, this is too good. I need to cause a ruckus, chaos.
Bring some chaos to the place. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what I realized, that I was like, every relationship that I've been in, I'm the one that made it destruct. And I thought about that. I was like, because when you actually have time to reflect on these things, you're like, oh my gosh, like, I'm the problem. And then your whole world starts blowing up.
Yeah. Sounds like accountability. Sounds like kryptonite. What is this? Oh no. Wow.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. And it didn't happen right away. Mm-hmm. It took time and it took effort, right? It took effort from me, because it's really easy to just be like, okay, cool, like, still not my fault, just blame everyone. Yeah, like, it's fine.
<Peace out. laughs>
Like, yeah, exactly. Men suck, it's the patriarchy. And that's the go-to response, right? That's what feminism teaches you as the go-to response.
Right.
And they're very crafty about this too. It's very well designed and well thought out. I bought into it. But then after I started having my own accountability, I started coming and I draw, like, this is also big things that happened to me. I stopped drinking alcohol. I stopped going to parties. I stopped socializing with the same people. I realized, wow, you're a very draining individual. I can't be around you. I realized that I'm a very sensitive person. So anyone's energy and any, and I hate that word energy, but like the person's spirit was heavy. You know what I mean? And when I started realizing and tapping into that, I was like, wow, I'm a very good judge of character. Why was I blocking this out? Wow. And I realized it was the drugs, the alcohol, like, you know, it was all the things that I was caught up in and the ideology. And again, like feminism is like the scapegoat. Like you don't have to take accountability because you can just blame everyone else for your problems, institutions, men, other women.
Yeah, I wanted to jump on that actually, because, you know, I want, one of my questions, you know, to you is, you know, what do you think are some of the most dangerous ideas, right, that feminism sort of teaches and kind of the kind of thinking that it breeds? And one of them you've mentioned, and that is the systemic part, right? Because if we live in an oppressive patriarchy, well, as you know, and as we know, it's easy to blame absolutely everything on the patriarchy. And the thing is, I see people doing it all the time, even up to today. I'm sure you kind of saw this video that's been going around of a model who had her contract revoked because she had put some thirst trap pictures up on Instagram. And instead of kind of coming away from the situation with some self-awareness and maybe with a bit of insight into what's appropriate and what's not, she goes on this rant about, you know, white supremacy and the patriarchy and misogyny, and that's the reason why she's lost her contract. What do you think are some of the most dangerous ideas that feminism puts out in there?
There are so many.
Oh no, we have time.
So that, I, you know, blaming everyone except yourself, the patriarchy, institutions, men, other women, anyone except yourself. A big part of feminism, modern feminism, I will say, okay, people will come at me for for that, but
sorry, Rebecca, sorry, I don't mean to be pedantic about this, but
okay,
where does that come from, this the lack of accountability? What is the root belief behind that? Is it the divine feminine? Is it the kind of the individualized truth? Is it everything is subjective? What is it at the root of that lack of accountability? Well, that not having a need to take personal accountability.
Yeah, it's that whole my truth. That whole my truth is the truth in my life. Right. And you're right, everything is subjective. We lost morality in this culture. There's no morals, there are no values, because morals and values were very much rooted in faith, whatever right. faith you belong to, whatever your higher power, which is patriarchal, correct, right? Because a lot of these ideas that they say are pushed by Christianity and other religions. And so when you look at these things, they're going to say, oh, well, that's why, like, the United States was built off of Christian men, morals, and right. values. We need to do away with those systems because obviously that's not working. And so we need to dismantle the patriarchy as their quintessential line. And it's dismantling the patriarchy and building something new. But they're building this new world off of bad ideas, right? The other things about feminism, oh my gosh, well, there's different movements that have spawned off of feminism. So you have the Me Too movement, right? Believe all women, which go hand in hand with that. Then you have the sexual liberation movement, which says, you know, sex work is real work. And, you know, the idea that marriage and children are bondage and slavery. All of these ideas are bad. And also, we went from our husbands are our protection, are the stronghold of our families, to let me now rely on the government for that assistance. I don't need a man. I don't need a man. I want a man. That's a huge thing being spoken about today. And what's the worst part about feminism is that there's so many women that believe that they're not a feminist, but when you start talking to them, it's like they're spitting out feminist ideology. And it's because it's baked into our media, our social media, everything growing up. I'm going to give my age. I'm 33. Okay. I grew up in front of the television. Every single show, Family Guy, any show you go on, on TV, it's the man is stupid, the husband's stupid, the wife, the mother is the smartest one. And the smartest one of the entire family is the daughter.
That's true. That's true. That's facts. That's facts. Yeah, that's exactly how it's portrayed. And, you know, just as you were talking about this dismantling, I think that where a lot of religious women, whether they're Christian, Jewish, Muslim or otherwise, right, who find ideas that, who find themselves drawn to feminism, right, there is a fundamental conflict there, right? Mm-hmm. Because as you said, our societies, by and large, were built on a religious foundation, right? Mm-hmm. Most societies were built on a moral code that found its home in faith, right? Mm-hmm. If the religion is patriarchal, if the religion is oppressive, which of course women feminists do say, mm-hmm. then that must mean that religious values are also patriarchal and oppressive. Mm-hmm. Which means that the values that our societies have been based on for millennia, mother, father, children, family, the bonds of kinship, loyalty, all the things, right? Working hard, sacrifice, duty, responsibility, morality, holding yourself back, virginity, hello, mm-hmm. all of these things, right? Are mm-hmm. now, through the feminist lens, deemed as patriarchal, oppressive, and unacceptable, and antithetical to a woman's happiness and personal freedom. Mm-hmm. But then now we have, as you said, a situation where a society is being built that completely trashes every single thing that I just mentioned. Mm-hmm. Even though human societies have been stabilized on that basis, ever since we know, right? Mm-hmm. So it's crazy to me that we are embracing and celebrating and pushing this really, toxic feminist narrative. Really, I don't get it. Like, what's the end in sight? Like, what's the goal? Is the goal for us all to be boss babes and freeze our eggs? Like, what's the deal here?
Well, to me, you touch on so many amazing points, and I also want to double down on that. So I look at today's society, I look at today's culture, and I see a complete debauchery, okay? Yeah. Women are drinking on par with men, on par, one-to-one. Yeah. Women are on more antidepressants than they've ever been. If we are the most liberated women in history, why are we more depressed? Why are we more anxious? Why do we have to rely on drugs and alcohol to cope with our lives? Okay. That is the question I ask so many women, because if all of these things, the sexual liberation movement and, the ability to push off your fertility, which is a lie, another lie, and the introduction of birth control, right? You're detaching that responsibility. You're removing the responsibility, because with sex, there is the possibility of a pregnancy. It's biology. And the problem with today is that, like you said, everything is subjective. So we don't call babies in the womb a baby. It's now a clump of cells. Sex work is real work. So prostitution and OnlyFans is upheld in our society, but a mother with four children and having marital sex with her husband is deemed inappropriate and disgusting. So when I look at this culture,
it's crazy.
At this culture, I look at my daughter and I'm like, as mothers who don't believe in this ideology, we need to do a better job at raising our children in order for them to make the changes in the next generations, because we're going to get into it, right? But what we're seeing today, the lowest birth rates of history, okay, all across the board. South Korea is paying women to have babies.
Wow.
They have the lowest birth rates out of any country. Okay, so we're seeing lower birth rates. We're seeing lower women's inability to have babies because they're pushing off they're pushing off fertility for later on in their early 30s, late 30s, and even sometimes in the 40s, right?
As well. Yeah.
And so when you do that, you can only have 1 to 2 children max.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas before you could have 5, 6, 7. Yeah, exactly. and I'm one of those women that I'm 33. I had my first baby, right? I'm praying to God for 2 more, God willing, right?
God willing, yeah.
But this is what we're seeing today, because these women are believing the lie that, oh yeah, I can push off my fertility. Oh, I can just take birth control. Oh, I can just have sex with whoever I want. But that's going to inhibit my pair bonding with my husband. And then I'm going to think about divorcing him because, you know, I can have whoever, because social media says it's okay. So it's a complete degeneracy that we're seeing in society. And that's exactly what they want. That's exactly, the people that are...
Who knows? The big they, capital T.
We won't get into those things.
It's the rebellion, right? It's mm-hmm. the rebellion and the destruction. That was the point, right? Because
the destruction of the nuclear family. They want to control the children. They want to control the mothers, the family, get the fathers out of the home, right? The matriarchy, let the mothers rule the family, get paid by the government to do that, and send your children off to school to get indoctrinated by the state so that they can be good citizens of whatever country they're living in. That's the playbook. Yeah. That's the playbook. Yeah.
And destroy the men.
And destroy the men.
Destroy the concept of masculinity. Just taint the whole concept of masculinity. I was speaking about this with some friends at the weekend, and we were just saying how, you know, if you have a generation, which we do now, probably 2 generations, of boys being raised in single parent homes, right? Either a father who's been completely neutralized, okay, through whatever means it was, passive aggression, the nagging, the cuckolding, whatever the case may be, but he's been neutralized as the father, or he's been kicked out altogether. And then you've got women, who are raising their sons to be...
To be feminine,
right? And to be feminine. And the thing is that we won't talk about single mothers today because, you know, I know that it's a huge issue. We'll probably have a conversation about this again. I think that there is a need to try to heal and teach single mothers because mm-hmm. there are so many of them, right? Mm-hmm. And they're not going away anytime soon, especially if the men have their way because they are done with marrying them. So mm-hmm. if no one's going to marry them and if men are not prepared to step in as stepfathers, then I think we need to start talking about how to heal and teach single mothers to raise their children to do better. But anyway, mm-hmm. I digress. I feel like there's a whole generation, and I think maybe 2, maybe even going on to 3, mm-hmm. that has missed out on I want to say the kind of upbringing that our mothers may have had, but more probably our grandmothers going back, where they were brought up ready to fulfill their feminine role, right? To look forward to their feminine role, to look forward to getting married, to look forward to being a mother, to look forward to that whole adventure, right? Our grandmothers knew what was up, okay? They knew what was up. They were trained for what was up, right? Just like our grandfathers, they were trained to take on the role when they got old enough. I think for many of our mothers, certainly my mother was a feminist, because she kind of came up in the 60s. So, she didn't raise me like that. Maybe your mother was not the same, but some of us may have had a tradition, more traditional mothers, but some of us will have had feminist mothers, right? And then, so you look at our generation, whatever our mothers did or didn't do, the education system, the movies, the music, the media, and now the social media has brought us up in a way. And I see that the sort of the millennials coming up as well, it's just more of the same being pumped, pumped, pumped. Forget about being a mum who needs to get married, like this whole thing. So what do you think we've missed out on? If we say our generation, sort of Gen X's and millennials, what did you think we've missed out on in terms of what being a woman is or what
I
being a
mean,
woman could be?
I think the entire aspect of homemaking, I think.
Yeah, go on.
Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
The aspect of homemaking, homesteading, learning the skills at home. In my household, and this is something that I'm so grateful for my mother. She taught me how to cook. She taught me how to maintain the house. You know, when we had guests over, we would get tasks. So I would clean the dishes and I would vacuum and I learned how to be a big sister and things like that. So that was ingrained in me, which I'm so grateful for because now my husband has an amazing cook. He's always so grateful for the meals that I make him. And for me, you know, I go to other women's houses, other wives, other couples' houses, and I see an unkept home and I'm like, what is going on? Like, don't you take care of the home? Don't. And I have friends that don't even know how to cook. They don't even know how to microwave, like make themselves eggs. These are women. These are women. I started, you know, I started learning videos on how to sew and how to make my own clothes and how to do pattern work and all of these different things because these are the things that we missed out on. And yes, you know, we live in modern society, but my goal is to hopefully have a homestead so I can garden and grow my own food and, you know, show my children how to live off the land. Like, that's what I want for my children. You know what I mean? And especially for my daughter, I want her to grow up and see a mom and the beauty of being a mother and not what we've seen Western civilization where it's marriages that, like you said, the husband is neutralized, the woman runs the household, and the kids run, the woman runs the husband, the kids run the household, right? And that's what we're seeing. I want my kids to grow up and have a childhood. I think we were the last generation to actually have like an actual childhood, like riding your bicycles and doing that stuff. Today, everyone's already on the iPad. I see children out at the restaurants on the iPad, glued to the television. I do
Too
every,
much.
it's too
Too
much.
much.
My
Too
daughter
much.
sees my iWatch and she knows how to mess with it. She's 6 months old. Tell me how this works. I'm changing her diaper and she's like finicky, like touches the screen. I'm like, oh my gosh, what is going on? Like, I need to get all
I
technology
need to
away
take
from
this
her.
off when I change
Yes,
her nappy.
yes. When I put her to sleep and when I change her diapers, I take off my watch because I don't want her to be distracted by these things. And it's hard, you know, it's hard to to get away from technology, but technology is the thing. It's a great advancement, but it's also changing the brain for these children. I wish more women would see the beauty of homemaking, the beauty of, you know, homesteading, like making your own food, growing your own food, making your own clothes, yeah. You know, learning about food preservation. I'm doing all this stuff now. Like I live in a fancy apartment complex, but we're looking to buy property so that I can have my own garden beds and
Yeah. The thing is, it's so interesting to me actually, because it's like there's this full circle. And I think society is like that. I think society just always, it's the pendulum swinging, isn't mm-hmm. it? So just as our grandmothers and great grandmothers lived this life and knew this very well, you know, I'm sure our mothers were more than happy to say, that's not for me, and go off and get, you know, degrees and careers. And maybe we were too. And it's only now that we're seeing your generation, because you and I are not the same generation. I'm 45, mm. right? Well, 44, really, technically speaking.
Technically.
But by the time this comes out, I'll be 45. So I'm definitely Gen X. And for most of us, you know, if you didn't pair up when you were younger, khalas, like, you know, it's over, right? If mm-hmm. you didn't, I mean, I feel very blessed that I accepted Islam at the age of, what, 21, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's the only reason why I thought of getting married, because, as you know, with Muslims, like, if you want to be with somebody, you need to get married. So mm-hmm. all of us at university, like, that was the hot topic. Mm-hmm. Where the brothers at? Where the brothers at? Like, it's true. You know, oh, I know a brother. Oh, my sister knows a brother. Oh, my uncle told me about a brother. That was the conversation, aside from schoolwork, at yes. university, that was the conversation. So anyway, I credit really my faith with me having married at 22 and having had my first child at that age, because definitely I was not on that path at all. You know, I wanted to finish my degree, get my master's, have a fantastic career, make loads of money, and then maybe have 3 kids on the tail end of it. You know how it goes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's where I'm at, right? Like, I came to this realization in my late 20s. And thankfully, you know, God blessed me with an amazing husband at the time that he did, because yeah. I was on that same trajectory of being single and yeah. not having any prospects, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so I feel very blessed. And also to the people that I surrounded myself with, because, you know, just like you rediscovering your faith, I rediscovered my faith, and I always mm-hmm. have been tapped into my faith. But when you when you just get into your faith and you realize, oh my gosh, the Bible says like what it means to be a wife, right? And so I have to reconfigure this brain,
recalibrate,
yes,
yep,
and go back to my North Star, because a lot of us, I think a lot of us, especially if we were raised, you know, in a religious home, we fall away. We come yeah. back. You know, we have this very much prodigal son, prodigal daughter. Yes. Mentality. Some come back too late, and that's where it breaks my heart, because you see these beautiful women with these yeah. beautiful careers, and you're like, how you could have made yeah. beautiful children and had and like 5 of them, and now you like and now you have 0. And so that it breaks my heart. Yeah. It breaks my yeah. heart, because it's when it's too late, it's too late. And biology doesn't care about how many degrees you have on the wall, how much money is in your bank account, you know, what your status is in society. It doesn't care. It doesn't
you
care.
Know, so, subhanAllah, it's a crazy thing as you're saying this. I'm thinking of the bottle, right? I'm thinking of the pushback, okay? The pushback is always, you know, women can do more. We can be more than just wives. We can be more than just mothers, right? We're capable of doing anything we put our minds to. And then you get the look at women in this field, in that field, in this field, in that field. Like we've come on out on top in almost every field, right?
Mm-hmm.
And which is none of it is untrue. Mm-hmm. I think we are capable of doing anything we want, right?
Mm-hmm.
But every choice has a consequence, right? Mm-hmm. And everything that you choose, you pay a price for it. And I think that one of the parts of this conversation that is conveniently ignored is that it's not cute in your 40s and in your 50s and 60s anymore. I was having this conversation with my sons and they were saying, Mom, just leave these girls, you know, like if these women want to have careers, if they want to like, you know, have their hoe phase or whatever, let them do it. Like, let them enjoy themselves in their 20s and, you know, let them enjoy themselves. That's what they said. Mm-hmm. They're happy. Leave them to it. And I said, you know what? In your 20s, it's cute,
mm-hmm.
right? It's a riot, I'm sure. It's a wild mm-hmm. ride. And the 20s feels like it will last forever. Even nowadays, the 30s feels like it will last forever because, you know, you see a difference between a 27-year-old and a 33-year-old. Sometimes you can't see the difference. Like, they're still looking good, you know?
Yeah.
And they've got more money now. They've got, you know, kind of, they've got a higher class lifestyle if they've played their cards right according to their rules, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then by then, they're in their financial stride. They have their own home. They've got the shoes. They've got the bags. They've got the girls' trips. They've got a lifestyle. Amazing. Beautiful. The Instagram is popping. Okay. The bank account is lit. Okay. It's all good. But it's not cute when you hit 40. It's not cute anymore at 45, at 50, at 55, 60, 70, 80, which is how long people be living these days. Especially these well-kept ladies who be in the gym, you know, and eating organic, vegan, blah, blah, blah. Okay. They're going to live long lives. And as I said to my sons, no one's got anything to say to them when they hit 40 because they can talk all the talk in their 20s. Be a boss babe, secure the bag, you know, like, you know, make your life, you know, anyone, what is it? Free yourself of anything that doesn't serve you. So many slogans, right? In their mm-hmm. 20s and 30s, it sounds great. They can make songs about it. They can do everything. They cannot say anything when that woman realizes that, shoot, I've missed my opportunity. Mm-hmm. There's no one out there for me. I've lost my chance of having a family.
Mm-hmm.
And even if, you know, the propaganda and all the conditioning has worked and she doesn't want kids, because that is a fact as well.
Yes.
We're being conditioned to see children as a burden and as an all mm-hmm. of this stuff, right? Even if she doesn't want children, there's no woman, well, except for the outliers, and we know we don't pay attention to outliers,
yeah.
right? Just leave them to the side. But very few women who are alone in their paid off house with their wardrobe and shoes and boxes of wine are sitting at 40, 45, 50 saying, this is the life.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not the way, guys. It's just not going to happen. And no one's got anything to say to those women. They can't mm-hmm. even say sorry because it's
exactly.
too late. It's
mm-hmm.
too late. That's why we're having these conversations, right?
They're so bought in. And at that point, it's like, if I don't continue to perpetuate this lie, like for these youngins, I'm going to look bad. I'm going to look stupid.
Yeah.
So I have to play this game. I have to play this to the end of my life. And what I wanted to also touch on what you said earlier, right? You know, the devil's advocate is always playing, oh, you know, like it's great to have your money. It's great to have all these promotions and degrees and all this other stuff. That's amazing. I think all women should get their education. I think all women should work in a career. However, where I want women to start understanding is that there is a point biologically and mentally, physically, emotionally, all that stuff, chemically that happens in your body when you hit your 30s and you desire children. A lot of women, I'm not saying all of them, like you said, there's outliers, right? So planning for that, right? Have your amazing career, have all of these things, but keep that in the back of your mind and say, okay, this is a possibility right here. Okay. This is going to happen for a majority of women, right? Mm-hmm. Lock the husband down. Okay. Yeah. Get all of the, like, treat.
Get strategic with it.
Exactly.
Get strategic with your life.
Let me, it's so crazy. I had a 5-year plan. I had a 10-year plan. I had all of the plans. Okay. Of my career, how I wanted to go. I wanted to be a billionaire, blah, blah, blah. Yes. Tell me if I had a plan on how I was going to meet my husband.
Listen, you know, when you say that, it reminds me of when Kevin Samuels used to give those women a hard time, and they used to come on there and talk about their achievements and their career and all of the things. Then he would ask them what they want, and they would tell him what they wanted. And he would ask them, well, what are you doing to get that? Had nothing to say.
Nothing. Because they chose. See, this is where I want women to, like, start grappling, right? You can be a lawyer, but know that there's a time limit on that. Do amazing work in the time that you have.
Yeah.
Also plan to get married and have children. Know that these things expire, right? Mm-hmm. And that's okay. And you can also, like, I hate when you know, these modern women tell, oh, well, she's going to be a stay-at-home mom. She has no work. What is she going to do? Okay, listen, there are moms that have that run businesses out of their home. I do YouTube. You do YouTube. You have books. You do all of these different things, right? The priority is always the family. Family first, everything else second.
But you see, that's therein lies the rub, right? There mm-hmm. is exactly, you've just put a you've just nailed it. The issue is, and I believe this, that as women, we, these generations that have come in since the sexual revolution, right, we've been groomed to be selfish in mm-hmm. that we are the center of our universe, and mm-hmm. our wants and desires and needs are primary, right? Mm-hmm. And so that, I think, is one of the reasons why, you know, women today feel so much unease when it comes to prioritizing a husband and mm-hmm. B, a family. It feels wrong. Well, why should I prioritize him? What about me, right? Mm-hmm. What about my happiness? What about my goals? What about my dreams? And the unfortunate thing is, and this is what I want to tell sisters out there, brothers probably know this already, but sisters, there's actually few things worse in life than having a mother who thinks like that.
Mm-hmm.
For the children. Because traditionally, throughout time, parents have always understood that the children's needs come first.
Right? Exactly.
The children must be protected at all costs. The children, they eat for, you know, they we make sure that they eat. We make sure that they're protected. We make sure that we guard our young, right? Like, mm-hmm. this is just human nature, right? Human behavior. So to be in a time where a mother sees her child or her children as a drain on her resources, either mm-hmm. personal, emotional, or physical, where she resents the care that she gives the child, where she resents the sacrifice, where she mm-hmm. resents the time that it takes to truly raise a human being, mm-hmm. this is a really scary time for children. Because guess what? The forces that want to raise your children for you, oh, they're ready. Mm-hmm. They're locked and loaded, mate. They're locked and loaded. They're ready. Okay. so we need to do some mental scrubbing, right? To be able to really kind of just be honest with ourselves and real with ourselves to say, okay, well, how much of this stuff has impacted me and the way I show up? Even if I did manage to, you know, get married and have children, because as we were saying, mm-hmm. you said be strategic, right? Mm-hmm. Understand that marriage, if you want to get married, put it as a priority. Don't think, assume that it will be at the end of your rainbow, right? After you've finished living this wonderful life, living your best life, that there'll be a man waiting at the end of it with 2 or 3 kids, because that's what we're seeing is the fairy tale.
And that's exactly, you nailed it. That's what women are sold on, right? Yeah. Do these things, get the college degree, get that amazing job, build your money, build your, you know, reputation and your social status. And at the end of all of that, we'll have Prince Charming and your five kids. I mean, two kids at this point.
Two and a dog. That's it.
But I wanted to touch on something that you said too. You said protect the children, right? That's something that is innate in every woman. Think about how insidious it is. Feminism has taught women to advance in your career. Get rid of your unborn child to advance your career, to make that career move, to make more money. You can get rid of it in the womb at any point in time up until birth. Wow. In some states.
Yeah.
If that is not going against nature, I don't know what is. I don't know what is. It's sickening to me. 60 million unborn children. 60 wow. million since Roe v. Wade. Okay. Think about how many women regret those decisions. Think about the women that, you know, have been hurt by it. And this is what feminism does. This is what, you know, this ideology does. It completely distorts a woman's true nature.
Her nature. Yep.
And it manipulates her to think, you know, oh, you can be better than this. Oh, you advance your life. It's your life and no one else's life. My role as a wife is to serve my family. That is my role. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful thing when you can do that, right? It's a beautiful thing. If I knew the love that I have for my daughter, if I even knew a fraction of that in my 20s, I would have never waited this long.
Wow.
I would have never waited this long. The amount of happiness and joy and emotion that I have, like, I'm not regretful of my decisions. I own them and I understand that I've made them and I have to live with them for the rest of my life. But if I knew this love, I would have had 6 of them, 10 of them. Like, and I'm a good mom, you know, and I didn't know that I was going to be an amazing mom. And I say that because, you know, I observe, and I'm an observant person, and I'm like, the love that my husband and I give to our daughter is like, hopefully she's going to grow up really well. You know what I mean? And hopefully we have more of them, but
hopefully you do. Yes. But God willing, you do.
But I wish women could feel that little bit of that love of a child looking at you and being like, just smiling and laughing. And, you know, of course they grow up. I'm sure you could talk to that.
We won't talk about that. It's okay. It's okay. No one's allowed to say anything in the comments, just oohs and ahs right now. Mashallah. But this is how we're programmed, aren't we, as human beings, as parents, as mothers, so that our young can survive, because we don't have kittens that can survive on their own after 3 to 6 months. You know what I mean? Like, ours take a little bit longer. So we need to have that instinctual love and sense of protection, you know, for our young, because, you know, they're going to be relying on us, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, going back to a point that I was trying to make earlier, which is, it's cute in your 20s, it's cute in your 30s. But, you know, when you're in your 40s and 50s, it reminds me of some of the conversations we've seen in the manosphere, where we've got women out there trying to live their best lives instead of enjoying their children's success and celebrating their children's marriages and celebrating their grandchildren and being grandmothers and, you know, and being the elders of the community. So those women that made choices that meant that they never had children, of course, there's always the cope, right? I'm the best auntie. I'm the rich auntie. I'm the, you know, the eccentric auntie. But let's be real for a second, guys. And I want to level with everybody here, right? Because, like, we all know that human beings are social creatures.
Mm-hmm.
We are not designed to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
But society forces us to live apart from our family groups.
Mm-hmm.
Go back a few generations, even if there was that auntie who didn't get married, she would be in the family,
yes,
right? She'd be living with people. She would be living with her people of her age and the younger generation. You had intergenerational living, you'd be homesteading, she's useful, she's part of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not the society that we live in today. So we talk about, you know, men who don't manage to pair up, and we know the loneliness that many of them will feel, right? And that mm-hmm. sense of isolation. So I also think that this lie that we're selling women about, you know, basically it'll all work itself out. When you're in your 40s and your 50s and you have not had a healthy relationship and you're on your own, and it's bad enough with parents in today's day and age that they don't get to see their kids more than a few times a month, right? Most, you know, parents, grandparents, they're going to see their grandchildren a few times a month at best for most mm-hmm. people, if that, let alone aunts who didn't get married, you know, mm-hmm. sisters who are not married, and they're just on their own. And I think of the weight of this life that we live, right? And the challenges that we face, health scares, deaths of loved ones, loss. And you're facing all of that on your own. You don't have a spouse, somebody who's checking in with you, someone to come home to. Like I said, what are the advertisers going to tell those women now? Because all they can offer them is more wine to drink and animals to raise, right? And just cats and dogs. And that's not going to fill the void. That's the sad thing, I think.
No, you nailed it. You absolutely nailed it. It's sad. It's really sad. And this is, you know, this is primarily why I speak on YouTube, because who's advocating for this? There's a small group of us, sure, but the majority of the things that you're seeing on social media is being a thought rocket on Instagram and, you know, being an OnlyFans model. When 18-year-old girls that are coming out of high school strive to be an OnlyFans model, we have a problem in our gender. Like, we have a problem in our society. Yeah. We need to fix whatever is going on, because, you know, this is a huge problem. And it's like you said, it's the destruction of the nuclear family. When you allow children to be raised by the state, you lose control of your children. Point blank, period.
Yeah.
They are now the state's to manipulate, to mold, to whatever. This is why we're seeing a lot of this trans ideology, you know, gender ideology being pushed to younger and younger kids, 3, 4, 2. Yeah. They're saying that, you know, young children can transition socially at younger ages. And I'm like, what are these parents doing? What are these parents doing? And it's incredible to me, you know, I talk about this too, the narcissism that we're seeing, because these mothers are being told to go to social media, to do whatever the Kardashians are doing, to do whatever social media influencers are doing. And all we're seeing is bad, the nasty, the dirty, the disgusting. And when we speak, right, we're countercultural, we're controversial. A decade ago, this was pretty normal. This was pretty much standard. No.
What's crazy is actually, I remember somebody saying how 5 years ago, even
just five years ago,
nobody would have thought that a question like "What is a woman?" would be controversial.
Correct.
A question that cannot be answered in public. Nobody would say that 3, 5 years ago. And, you know, as you said about the state raising the children, I think there's something else to add to that, which is that really what we're seeing is there's the state on the one hand, which I guess you could say is through legislation and education, mm-hmm. education system, right? But what about the media?
Oh, yeah.
What about the advertising? What about Hollywood? What about the music? It's all along the same lines. It's like there's a playbook and everybody's off, you know, is reading off the same playbook, is following the same rules. And, you know, I always say to young parents, for some of us it's too late, but for some of you, you still have time to not give your children access to screens, like mm-hmm. almost period, right? Because mm-hmm. the reason I say almost period is because a lot of parents think, I'll let them have a little bit mm-hmm. and I'll monitor it and I'll control it, especially That's when it comes not. To devices. And Mm-mm. yeah, it's a pipe dream, because literally that phone that you give your child to play with while you're busy doing X, Y, and Z, it's a gateway drug, right? Yeah. As you said, even your daughter knows how to work your watch, you know, they pick it up, and it's really the values that you see on Netflix, the values that you're hearing in the music, the values on TikTok, that's what they are imbibing all the time. Mm-hmm. And another reason why I'm advocating for more parents to make some hard choices about a partner staying at home, because in today's economic climate, it's not the easy choice. Mm-hmm. It's certainly not the normal choice like it was, say, in the 50s or whatever. But to really make some serious decisions about a parent staying at home is because being able to speak to your children and having the bandwidth, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just the time, it's the bandwidth. Mm-hmm. You've got two parents who are working stressful jobs, whether they're high-powered jobs or not, just that they're working stressful jobs. When they come home, they don't have the bandwidth.
They want to detach.
Right, exactly. So anything that helps them to manage the children, they're going to go for it. Whether it's mm-hmm. TV, whether it's Netflix, whether it's giving them an iPad, letting them have a phone, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the ways that we're losing our children, is if traditionally it's the mother in the home, the mother who is monitoring what's happening, who's talking to the children, who's listening to them, who's getting to know them, finding out what's happening at school, you know, like keeping up with the books they're reading, like that life.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, it. I see people online all the time talking about going back to that life, about mm-hmm. homeschooling their kids, about, you know, leaving work so that they can work from home, or so they can just concentrate on these children. Because, like I said, if we are too distracted to raise these kids, trust and believe.
Someone else is doing it.
Them. Exactly. Exactly.
And I want to touch on something that you said as well, right? You know, it in everything, it's all strategy. It's all having the foresight as well. So my husband is the primary breadwinner of our household. He goes to work. I stay at home. Mm-hmm. We live in an amazing area. We have an amazing life. We live below our, like, we live at our means. Okay. We're not living these lavish lifestyles. If people could dial back the amount of Starbucks they drink, the amount of things that they're buying on Amazon, because trust and believe, like, Amazon's a button away and there's things showing up at the house every 2 seconds. It's about discipline. Okay. And having the understanding that, like, you can budget this stuff in. I know a family, I know multiple people that the woman stays at home, the mom stays at home. One of them has 7 children and she's pregnant with her 8th child. I have another friend who has, she's working on her 5th child. Okay.
She's working on her 5th child. She's percolating it away. She's got a bun in the oven or something else.
Yeah. So, and they live well in their means, right? Mm. It's these lavish lifestyles that people want to portray for social media. So of course you have to have these high scale jobs, because we know that if you just paid if you just lived in the right house, with the right house payment, right, your right mortgage payment, didn't buy the luxury cars, the luxury vehicles, go on those luxury trips, you can save a lot of money. Yep. And guess what? Your wife can stay at home. And mind you, a lot of jobs are now online, part-time work. There's this website called The Mom Project, and you can get part-time jobs from the comfort of your home, right? And so what I'm saying is that if you do require two-income household, there are ways to do it without both parents leaving the home, right? And hopefully it's the mother staying to raise the children. And for us, I want to homeschool River and hopefully more children that we have, because I see, like, first of all, that's a full-time job, like homeschooling, all of that, right? Or finding a school that doesn't have the ideologies that we see, but it all infiltrates. And so we have to be very mindful of it, and allowing the mother to be at home to really understand these things, because we know when our children are in distress, we know when our children are going through something, we pick up on that very, very easily, right? So we can tune into what our children need at the time that they need it, and trust and believe it's not an iPad. Trust and believe it's not putting the TV on, you know what I mean? And so we have to be mindful and strategic in our decisions that we're making, and how we spend our money, and how we operate our household, right? And I think if more people sat down and budgeted it out, it could work for a lot more people than we think. Maybe if it's not in a big city, maybe you have to move out of that big city to be in a bigger home, a bigger environment, whatever, right? But these decisions are not easy, but they're very doable still in this economy, still with the inflation, still with these things, because I see many people doing it, many people doing it. So that excuse is a problem with you and your spouse. If you can't manage that's the issue. And right, like if that's, you know, you guys have to really have these conversations. And I hope this is practical for your viewers, because
100%.
Because I think that the excuse is always going to be out there. Oh, inflation. Oh, did you see gas prices? Do you know what groceries cost? Yes, sis, I do. And I make sure that I cut my chicken correctly, and I make sure I make my meals stretch, right? Yeah. And I'm very mindful of how I'm going to prepare these meals, how I'm going to, what I need for my children. Do they need all of the toys? No, you could probably do away with it. You can shop secondhand. There are many things that you can do practically that don't take a lot of effort in order to save that money, so that hopefully you can transition out of the workforce and into the home. I'm off my soapbox.
I love it. This is so, so good. And, you know, as you said, you know, it's doable, right? But also I think it requires two things. One is the will has to be there, right? Mm-hmm. You have to know what you want to do and why, right? So if you are wanting to cut costs, or to live more simply, or for one, you know, for the mom to stay home, you need to have a good reason why. Okay. And for many of us, it's a faith imperative, right? Certainly within my audience, you know, if we've got women who are making a decision to say, you know what, the tarbiyah, the nurturing and the education of my children is my primary responsibility, and that is what God is going to ask me about when I meet him. He's not going to ask me about whether I got to work on time per se, whether I hit the sales targets, whether I hit $1 million or whatever. He's going to ask me, I entrusted you with these children. What did you do with them? Mm-hmm. I entrusted you with this man, with this husband. What did you do with him? I entrusted you with these parents. What did you do with them? Right? So there's the why of the piece, and also understanding that this lifestyle, as you said, it's a full-time gig. Being present mentally and physically, right? Being creative and active mother, enjoying motherhood, dare I say, is a full-time job, and you need to have your head in the game. Mm-hmm. You need to have your head in the game, because if you don't have your head in the game, you become one of those stay-at-home moms who basically, you know what it looks like, all right? We know what that looks like.
I know many of them too.
The home is not a priority. The children are not a priority. The children are being kind of fobbed off. Any excuse to kind of get away, whether it's to watch, you know, the soaps, or to be on your phone, or to go out for coffee or whatever. And that's what I mean about firstly having a really strong intention for why you're doing what you're doing, and understand that it requires all of those skills and talents that we are so eager to give to the workplace.
Exactly.
Required at home.
Exactly.
That you intellect, nailed it. Girls. Yeah, so that intellect, okay, that creativity, that, you know, the math skills, the time management, the, you know, just the organization. Okay, it's needed in the home. If you're going to run a successful home, an efficient home, a loving home, a fun home, we need all of those skills and talents that you've been blessed with, that we want to go out and run off and give to some workplace. Our children need them. Our homes need them. Our husbands want us to bring our full selves to this role. And subhanAllah, if we can do that, the kind of children that grow up in a home like that, there's no comparison with children who grow up in a home where the mum is checked out. That's me and my little soapbox.
Absolutely. I tell people, my husband's the CEO. I'm the COO. I'm the operations team over here. Okay. And I have to make sure that the operations is, and this is me being the entrepreneur, right? Like, I know how to time manage. I know how to do logistics. And so I'm doing logistics all day long. If you can apply the skills that you learn from the workplace, the skills that you learn from your education, I'm a mechanical engineer. Best believe that my daughter is going to grow up learning math before everyone else. Okay. and my other children. Okay. So that was the primary role for women. If you think about it, the reason why we get educated, the reason why we learned how to read, is so that we could read to our children, is so that we can teach them how to read, how to do math, how to have these skills. And I think it's so important. And that is why the education is so important for women. Having those hard skills are very important, and also the soft skills for women, so that we can translate it into the home. You're not deluding yourself. You're not doing away with your old self. You are transforming into who you were supposed to be. You're taking all of those skills that you learn, all of those hard times that you learn. Like my dad used to say, you know, it's a school of hard knocks, and you're going to learn from them. And so you can apply them to your children, and your children can learn these skills. I would love for my daughter, I put my daughter on the counter so she can watch me cook, right? And I show her everything. She has no idea what I'm doing. I was like, I'm cutting the chicken. Do you see? Yes. I'm putting spices. We have to flavor the chicken. And she's looking at me like, okay.
You are indoctrinating that child.
And you better believe she's going to be a great cook, okay? And her husband's going to tell me that.
All right. So I know that we've taken so much of your time, and I know you need to rest up after, you know, your day and baby's asleep. Just a couple more questions. First question is, what will you be teaching your daughter? Maybe three things that you'll want to pass on to your daughter about being a woman.
I want her to respect men, firstly, her father, right? And then her husband, because once she leaves our home, she's going under the care of her husband. And so me being respectful to my husband and showing her what love is between a husband and a wife, that is the first thing I want to teach her, that love that we have is very fundamental to her growing up and learning to trust in a man, right? Because that's what I lacked. That's what I lacked from the beginning. And that's what turned me. I was like, I can't see my father. I can't respect my father. Therefore, I need to be the man. I need to be the one to take over. And I don't want her to experience that. I want her to see a loving home where, you know, I I kiss my husband. I hold, like, I hug my husband when he comes in. She can see that, you know? Mm. So just a living example of what it means to be a woman, what it means to be a virtuous woman, what it means to be a feminine woman, but also those skills like cooking and cleaning and learning how to sew, like learning these things together, right? I want her to love these things the way that we were supposed to, right? That nurturing nature. And hopefully she'll grow up with a brother or sister and I can show her, you know, what being a pregnant, like, being a pregnant mommy and, you know, having her love on the baby and all that stuff. And honestly, you know, kids, I feel like I was raised amazingly, right? Kids will always go off and experience themselves. They always have their, you know, a lot of them have their prodigal son, prodigal daughter moment, but knowing that I taught her the skills and also our faith, right? Faith is so important, and showing her how we pray and showing her, you know, respect for God. All of these things, that's number one. I should have started with that, but that's number one, right? Because that's who we get our morals and values from, so that we can see our physical relationships and say, okay, that's how God, you know, God, that's how God loves, like, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want to teach her, you know, and I know that she will eventually go into the world. I know that I can't control my kids. I can just do the best job as a mother that I possibly can do. And that's hopefully instilling our morals and values to her and to our other children. And then those hard skills, I want her to be a great cook. Okay. She's going to be Chef River up in there.
Chef River. I love that. I love that. And so lastly, Rebecca Barrett, what do you love about being a woman?
Oh, I love everything. I love my nurturing nature. I love being a mom. I've never loved anything more than being a mom. And oh gosh, don't get emotional. Okay. And
it's okay.
I know, but just okay. Once I took away that facade, that character that I was playing, I could be I could be at peace. Yeah. I don't question myself the way that I questioned myself before. I know who I am, right? Mm-hmm. And that's such a beautiful thing, because once you stop questioning yourself, once you stop like believing what the world says about you, right? You're just in peace, and you can just be exactly. And I'm not apologetic for being a good mom. I'm not apologetic for being a homemaker. I'm not apologetic for loving my husband the way that I do. I'm not apologetic for any of these things, because that is who I'm supposed to be, right? Mm. That's who we're supposed to be. And it's such a beautiful thing when you can tap into that, when you see the strength. When I delivered my daughter, I deliver her all natural in a pool of water. Okay. I felt what the empowerment that I felt. I was like, I am Superwoman. I did this. Yes. You know? And that's a feeling that no one can take away from me, that ability to carry this baby all the way to birth and experience that. It's like our bodies are powerful, are like, and I wish that's something that women knew, is like our femininity is so powerful, right? Submitting to our husband is a powerful thing, because it's easy to rebel. Trust me, it's easy to rebel, right? But having that discipline, having that ability to just trust in what he has to do, I can just rest. I'm not stressed. I'm not on antidepressants. I'm not on, like, I don't drink alcohol. I can just live my life, and I feel free for the first time in my life. I feel free from what the world says I have to be, what the world wanted me to be, and all of these like burdens and chips on my shoulder. I feel free. And it's so amazing. I wish more women could feel this feeling of freedom, of like, oh, like taking that deep breath from within and like just relaxing.
Yeah.
And that's what I feel like. I mean, that's a whole long-winded reason of why I love being a woman, and I love it being in my feminine.
It sounds like you love being this woman that you are now, who is on her purpose, right? Who is doing what she was created to do. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah. And I smile more. I lost my smile. It's crazy. People are like, wow, you're glowing. I'm like, no, I'm just happy. Like, and it changes you. I'm telling you, I'm going to send you a photo of me when I was a feminist. And you're going to see.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I am familiar. Guys, you can go to her channel to see. She's got a video with pictorial evidence. Yeah, no, I've seen the transformation, and it's a beautiful thing to see. Well, as a mom of five, I want to send you lots of love and light to you and your and your husband, and inshallah, God willing, your growing family.
Yes.
Yes. Keep us posted. Listen, sis, where can people find you? How can people reach out to you? Tell us where to reach you.
Yes. So I am on YouTube at Rebecca Barrett is my name. You can search me there. And then I'm also on Instagram. Not really. I just pop in here and there to make people upset, apparently. But you can find me on Instagram and TikTok at I am Rebecca Barrett. And yeah. And I also have a podcast, if people don't know this as well. It's called Probably Problematic. Oh, it's it's different from my YouTube content. It's more political. I love talking about political commentary, social commentary, things of that nature. So if you want to find me there as well, I host it with 4 other women, and they're amazing. But yeah, that's where you can find me.
I love it, love it, love it. Thank you so much, sis. I am so, it was just wonderful. You guys could see, those of you who know me on this channel, you can see I'm chimming. I'm cheesy. That was just so, so wonderful. Thank you so much. Now, this is over to you guys. It is time for you to pay your dues. It is time for you to put in the comments, what did you love about this conversation? What are your takeaways? What are your reflections on the conversation that we had? Make sure that you give the video a thumbs up. Make sure that you subscribe to the channel, and make sure that you follow and go and check out Rebecca Barrett's channel as well. We are not stopping this conversation. We are continuing with this conversation, and we are not going to stop talking about womanhood and the challenges that womanhood is facing and reclaiming, really, if I can say, natural womanhood, reclaiming the space to be women, fully women. And hopefully my goal is to inspire the next generation coming up with natural womanhood and getting them excited about what it really means to be a woman. So Rebecca, thank you so much. It's been a fantastic conversation. Love to you guys. And thank you, everybody. Jazakallah khair. Assalamu alaikum. Bye.
Bye.